Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're definitely going to talk about Agatha because we both watched that. We got a lot of Marvel stuff to talk about, but we haven't talked. We have talked Star Wars recently. We haven't talked, I guess, like really lovingly about Star Wars recently.
Yes.
Because there hasn't been anything, not that it's bad. But it's been so meh for so long. And everybody, any critics will decry, like, Andor is so great. And I liked parts of Andor. Like, I don't see why everybody thought it was, like, above and beyond the best thing they've done outside of Rogue One. Because I don't know. Parts of it were so boring to me. But anyway, we're not going to talk about Andor. A trailer dropped for Skeleton Crew this week.
Yes,
and I can already see the hate coming for this.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
because it's so plucky. And I don't want to say cute. Cute sounds diminutive. But
it's a little twee, but okay, I'll let you talk before I interject, but yeah, definitely twee, like,
yeah,
cute, like, I think it is a little cutesy, but it also feels very of a specific, very specific type of filmmaking, but again, like, very kind of, yeah, I don't know what the word would be that isn't cutesy, but it's not.
It doesn't sound like we're trying to, like, knock it down a peg.
Exactly. That's the big thing, is that I'm not, like, you know, when you say that kind of stuff, like, the automatic thing is like, oh, well, fuck that. Like, yeah. It's not that. Like, it's definitely not that, but it has that aspect of it, of like, oh, man, that's kind of funny and cute. They're kids. It's plucky.
So it comes from John Watts, right?
Yes.
Who, like, everybody listening to this will know, directed the three MCU Spider-Man films, which are, I mean, head and shoulders, like, above 50% of the MCU output. Like, yes. They're in the top. Like, if you make a top 10, I think all three of the, like, the only franchise that has all three of their films or all of their films in the top 10 MCU, I mean, six slots is Cap and Spidey, probably. So,
yeah, you know. I would actually, you know, I'd make an argument that I could make an argument because as a whole, Guardians needs all three, that, like, I would say, like, I don't know,
MCU,
like,
top 10, it's just, yeah, Spidey, Guardians.
Spidey, Guardians.
You can't have a top 10. It's got to be a top 15 because so many of those are tied. But so John Watts is not coming back to the MCU, partly because he has stepped into the Star Wars universe.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got this, well, he also has a show called The Old Man on FX, which seems to be doing pretty well. I watched the first season, have not gotten to the second season. And Wolfs, he did Wolfs, right? And
yes.
You really enjoyed that. And from what I've heard, like everybody's saying that all of those people are all in for a second one.
Yes, so, and he's also got this whole thing of, like, everybody has this rumor that he's actually going to take over the directing reins for the next Oceans movie that they're making. Oceans, I guess it would be Oceans 14. Like, okay. Like Soderbergh does not want to do it, though. I have this feeling that they're gonna bump him enough to where he's gonna do it. Like, maybe Watts starts and scripts it, helps them scripts it, gets it across the line, and then Soderbergh just takes over. But that's the rumor. And he's doing a second Wolves movie. So like, he's going places, right? He doesn't have to have the MCU and like to be tied down, tied down the way that you are as a director in the MCU, unless your name is like Ryan Coogler.
Yeah. But the thing that got him the gig with Feige and company was a movie called Cop Car.
Yes.
That I didn't see until he had been announced. And I was like, okay, well, I want to see what this guy is about and mm-hmm. what he can do. Cop Car is a very fun but also intense movie.
Yes.
And the most important thing to take for this, at least, is that he gets very good performances from the two kids that are the stars of that movie. It's about two kids who steal a cop car and like everything that entails. And if you saw the trailer for Skeleton Crew, that sounds really, really familiar. So I can't fault him for kind of going back to very basic premise, because there is something really kind of like, it grabs you. Like, you remember being, unless you're an asshole, you remember being a kid and not getting into that kind of trouble, but thinking about getting into that kind of trouble, you know?
Well, yeah, or like, you know, I don't know if you ever did it, but I did it, and like, I'm old enough to admit it. Like, you know, doing those things like where, like, you, like, I used to, like, I was a naughty kid. Like, I used to get out, like, I used to go out my window at night and meet up with my friends, and we'd just go bike around the neighborhood at like midnight just because it was fucking cool.
That was right. Like,
Oh, man. I find out something about Ryan like that, it like warms my heart, because it's like, I know that like me and the dude did not talk as much as I wanted to, but man, like, we had like similar tracks about things, and like, and that makes me feel good. Like, that I wasn't the only one out there doing stupid shit like that. But I mean, that's the kind of thing that like we don't get anymore. Like, we don't get that kind of kid adventure. Like the naughtiness of like, and I know it sounds weird because it's like, it's not really naughty. It's just kids being kids, but it's like the Goonies, right? Like, no kids.
The only comp we have recently is Stranger Things. And
yeah,
while I'm still like enjoying most of Stranger Things, I would say it's become a victim of its own mythology and success. Absolutely. Like, they have to keep telling that story. it hasn't been able to deviate away from the Upside Down. I get that that's what they started with, but you know, it's lost its luster for me, at least. Like, it, you know, there's still great performances in there, but I was trying to think of the last truly kids thing. Stranger Things, the first season, they were definitely kids, you know. It's been 10 years now, so they're not kids anymore. But
no,
before that, like, I'm struggling, man. But like, in like major pop culture where they were truly, truly kids, like, but you're right, we used to have this all the time, you know. E.T., Goonie, like, Spielberg kind of lived in that realm and like wanted to bring a lot of that stuff to fruition, and we don't have a lot of people doing that anymore. And
not at all. Like, and it's like the only one I can think of that keeps on popping into my head is Holes, the Disney movie.
But oh, even yeah.
then, that was not even kids. That was teens, right?
Yeah, like teens and preteens, like that 12-year-old kind of thing. But yeah, 12 to 14, somewhere in there.
Which I guess is like the neighborhood of it. Like that's Goonies. Like the 12 to like the preteen thing, like the 11 or 12-year-olds, right? That's the last thing I can really think of that felt like an adventure.
Well, we had the JJ movie, but
oh yeah, Super 8, but that was up its own ass, and yeah. Like yeah, I mean, I guess, I mean, I don't like,
you but know, even weirder... that was just a like it was hot for a minute, but like yeah. Who the fuck has talked about Super 8 in like since the month after it came out, you know?
Nobody. I mean, not even its hardest, its ardent fan, the hardest fans of it, like, because it just, it tried too hard. Like, that was the thing, is that, like, these kinds of things don't just, like, you can't make them happen. They have to be kind of lightning in a bottle, right? Like, these, like, Stranger Things was literally lightning in a bottle. Like, you cannot reproduce that, no matter how much you try. It's just got to be a lot of love and passion for making this kind of stuff and being what I feel like is an elite tier director, because you cannot, like, I feel like the hardest thing to do is to get performances out of kids, because they're like, they're all ADHD. They're all up their own asses with their own fucking things. They're little narcissists, right? And their attention span is 5 minutes long. And how do you get a kid to work on a set that, even with conditions, there's 8 hours of work that has to be done, right? And so however Spielberg did it was fucking amazing, right? Like, he's the GOAT of children directors. But then, like, you got guys like John Watts that's able to do it. But, I mean, that's a smaller component of the larger picture of a very complex thing, right? So I look at it like, man, this is some fucking, that's a hard, like doing a kid's movie period is hard enough. But then you add in other components like an adventure film
and it's not a film, it's a TV series. TV and series. It's set in the Star Wars universe. There is a, like I said, we can already see the hate for this. Like before, when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, the quote, hardcore Star Wars fans are going to fucking hate this.
Oh yeah, they absolutely we both know that. And you know what? I don't give a fuck.
Me either, because oh my god, it looks so much fun.
Like, as soon as they used not Ground Control to Major Tom, but the other one that like is basically a sequel, but it's not as good, and they're doing it in Hatties, I was like, what? Wait, what? They're doing a pop song for, like, they usually use Star Wars music, but it was so kind of like Cantina, like original Return of the Jedi music, like, you know, from for the dance scene, like not the Jedi Rocks fucking thing. But even then, a little bit of that, it's such a like kind of like charming, jaunty thing that I was like, okay, yeah, I can do this. And then you see the actual, like, the concept from, like, you know, like, they give you the, like, this isn't just going to be, like, we're going off someplace. It's, like, there's true danger and stakes for these kids. And, like, then you give them a Jack Sparrow, like, a guy that you totally can tell you cannot trust. Like, as soon as
like, oh my god, he is like gonna get, not get the kids, but like it is like I hate to keep saying like it is him riffing on Cop Car, his own thing, but like when you meet Kevin Bacon in Cop Car, you're just not a good guy,
But like that's the thing that I'm jiving with this thing. It's like, yeah, like I know it's weird. Like, people are probably thinking, what the fuck? You want kids in danger? But I grew up with like movies like, do you remember that fucking Kevin Dillon movie? Okay, like there's a series of movies in the 80s, a subgenre of military adventures where kids have to. Iron Eagle is like basically this template where a fucking 16-year-old flies an F-16, one of the most complex jet fighters to ever fucking be produced, to save his father with Louis Gossett Jr. Like, that's Iron Eagle, guys. Go fucking watch it. Like, it's fucking great. But then there's this other movie with Kevin Dillon where the kids go into North Korea and save their parents who are POWs. I think it's called The Mission or something like that. But not to be like confused with the beautiful De Niro movie that was shot in fucking South America for 2 years. Not that one. But there's this other movie. And I'm like, that's what we... Toy Soldiers? Do you remember fucking Toy Soldiers?
Toy Soldiers, Die Hard?
Do it, fucking dude. Fucking Die Hard in a prep school, man. Like, I fucking loved that movie. When Will Wheaton died, like, we as junior hires, I know this sounds fucking disgusting, but we as junior hires...
It's called The Rescue.
Rescue, yes! Like, but in Toy Soldiers, when he fucking dies, and he, like, his gun, the gun shoots up in the air, we would do that. Like, anytime, like, one of us got caught or in trouble or something, like, we would do that as that fucking, like, oh, man, you got me for so fucking long because of that goddamn movie. Like, that's how much, like, but also, like, just back to the point, I grew up with those things, like, Kids in Danger, like, kids like this kind of stuff. Like, I don't know what, like, we live in this safe, sanitized thing in 60 minutes to catch a predator and all that bullshit. Like, I know that, right? But I don't think kids have changed all that much from when we were kids to where they don't want to see themselves or kids that are a little bit older get into fucking massive trouble. Like, it's like horror movies, right?
I mean, that's what the movies are for, like, to live like vicariously through that, you know? And I mean, this also to me has a little bit, even though it's not like kids don't know that there's outer space, but, you know, it's very much a Star Wars thing. But it's River Phoenix, right? The Explorers?
Yeah. River Phoenix. Where,
yeah. Like, has that kind of vibe where it's like, you know, kind of getting into the unknown to them, even though the Explorers is very much getting into the unknown. But yeah, like, to capture all of that in the Star Wars universe, and like, I haven't looked into, again, I know that there's probably hate already out there, but like, I remember a lot of people being so snippy and shitty about the I guess we were calling him Little Greedo in episode one in Phantom Menace. Yeah. It's Annie's friend. and how kind of like that is derogatorily twee, you know? And not knocking George, but like, a lot of that shit with the very young kids in that is not, it's just not good. But this, we see a very young alien creature. I forget their names, but
Jedi rocks, like Atlas, the one that looks like a blue elephant.
Yeah, the young Max Rebo. But we see a child version of that species, and it doesn't feel like that to me. I mean, ultimately, it might come off like that. This might fall flat on its face. I don't think it will, but it very well could. But it didn't give me that, like, kind of like, I don't want to say stomach churning, but that little bitty, like, twinge of like, oh, stomach kind of hurts because this is not great. And I don't know. It just feels, and it is Major Tom coming home that's in the trailer. In Hutties, which if this show just features a bunch of like pop songs, but in different Star Wars languages, That in and of itself, like, I already can't wait to buy the fucking vinyl.
So. Yeah, seriously, dude. Like, oh my god. Oh my god, that would be so great, dude. Like honestly, that would be fucking amazing. Like, I didn't even think about that because, okay, so like the thing that we know about John Watts is that he loves pop. He loves pop songs. I mean, you can watch his Spider-Man movies, and he's got like this elite playlist of 80s like pop songs. Even though like kids nowadays kind of like that stuff, but kind of don't. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's one of those things where I'm like, yeah, you know, it could be.
Here's the thing. Maybe he's not making it for them. And that's fine.
That's too. True. And that's
if you're true. Making this for me,
mm-hmm.
like I'm okay with it. If 17-year-olds or 12-year-olds of today, or if they don't like it, then that's fine. I don't care. They're not really into Star Wars anymore anyway. So
yeah, I mean, Marvel is their, like, MCU is their Star Wars now. Like, you know, like, let's be honest. Like, that's the thing that, like, they talk about the Avengers movies the way that we talk about, like, Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi, right? Like,
yeah.
The first Avenger movies are very much so in that similar ilk of like, elite, top-tier pop culture films, right? Like, that's literally, so Star Wars is kind of for us anyways. Though there are kids, I know of kids that love Star Wars.
And what, here's what I really do hope for this show. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to jump to Agatha just yet, but
yeah.
I do, like, we're at a place for sure in Star Wars that we've been with the MCU mostly for the last couple of years since COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, I don't know, like, it's not that things are bad, it's just that nothing is excellent. There, you have a few outlying things, mm-hmm. Guardians 3 being one of them, but, yeah. Like, nothing is truly, truly excellent. And then you have, of course, Deadpool Wolverine predates Agatha, but, like,
mm-hmm.
that was almost a... Like, if that movie had sucked, it would have been more surprising than it being successful. Agatha comes along, and everybody's given up on the MCU. But mm-hmm. here you have this show that is doing it. Like, it was a show that a lot of us were going, why are you still making this? Who's asking for this? But then they're just like, well, we're doing it. And then they give us Hush. They give us the show. And you're like, without any knowledge of, I mean, we could have guessed at some things, and a lot of people did, but we didn't know it was going to be this. And it's the thing that we said we weren't asking for, but when we got it, like, those of us who, you know, stuck with it and are truly into it are like, holy shit, like, I did not know I needed this, but fuck, I needed this. And I hope that that's what Skeleton Crew becomes for Star Wars, because it is something that's flying kind of under the radar. It is a mm-hmm. show that sounds like, quote, hardcore Star Wars fans are sitting there going like, this is not what we want.
But
like, this isn't what we want. Give us what we want. But then when we get it, I hope it's very much like, oh shit, like, yes.
It becomes The Mandalorian. Because, like, I feel like if you had gotten, like, here's the thing is that, like, if we really go back and we think about The Mandalorian, we didn't know what we were getting because they capsulized it and hid it from us. But if we were told that this was a story about a pseudo father and a baby Yoda, do you know the kind of bloodshed and knives that would be out for this fucking show?
Oh, it would have been... Like, from the... Well, first of all, so many people were like, oh, why, I don't understand why it's not a Boba Fett show. And, you know, there was a lot of that, and...
And then we found out why.
Yeah.
Not a Boba Fett show. We literally... like, there's... Like, in fandom, you guys, I'm going to tell you something. There's no good way to do a Boba Fett show. You know why? Because if you listen to our other episodes about Boba Fett, you're going to realize Boba Fett is the thinnest, the paper thinnest, not even paper thin. It's after the paper has been burnt. It's ashes. The character does not hold weight. Sorry, guys.
Boba Fett, like, and people are probably going to hate me, but Boba Fett is the Star Wars version of Dr. Dre. And I know Dr. Dre has a lot of fans, and I probably made this analogy with other things, but for me, I don't like Dr. Dre music. Okay. I don't like his solo stuff.
Yes.
But when somebody's doing something and Dre is on there, it's the best shit on the album. Period.
Yeah. Well, it's the Timbaland effect, right? Like Timbaland or the Hulk effect.
That, yeah. Timbaland solo stuff, not great. You get him to produce something and show up on something, it's like, this is the best shit I've ever heard. Like, Ludacris is almost the same way, although his solo stuff is it's got a vibe to it, like very clubby kind of, you know.
Those three albums are, like, from Luda, are great.
Yeah.
Like, they're unequivocally great, but if you go back, all of the songs have features on them. It's like this feature land. Fuck it. It's like, it shouldn't even be Luda. It should be everybody else.
Yeah, Luda and Friends.
Luda and Friends. But it's the same concept of like you're
Boba
right.
Boba Fett is good when he shows up in something. It's cool when he shows up in something. When he is the story, it's not great.
No, it's not. It really isn't. Because there's nothing to hang on. There's no meat to hang on from those bones. So it just becomes like, Johnny Storm and fucking Wolverine and Deadpool. Like, it just like there's nothing to hold on to. So it's just a bag of blood, meat and fucking bones. Back to Skeleton Crew. Like, I think that you're 100% right. Like, it's like, at this point, we need a soft reset and going, like, and it's not even like, I think it's just fandom got so upset at, and I know this sounds weird, but at Ahsoka, they got so fucking mad at Ahsoka because it wasn't what they thought that they wanted. It was whatever Dave wanted to do. And they got so upset that it wasn't like the savior of Star Wars, which I don't think that Ahsoka ever should have been, right? Like, it was a show that we went in reverse and we started talking about just how terrible Star Wars was. And I think that we need something uncomplicated. And also The Acolyte. I mean, The Acolyte, fucking wow. Talk about
dropping the ball, man. That was the show. Like, that was a thing that we all had such high hopes for, and maybe that's part of the problem, is we had such high hopes for it, but they really dropped the ball on that, man. And parts of it were really good. It was well cast. Overall, the acting was really good, but like they felt so uncommitted to the story and taking real chances with shit that, yeah, it is very, and actually that's a good a point about the other news. It's not really news that broke about Star Wars this week. But I don't want to all that to say, Skeleton Crew, we are excited for.
Very much so. Like, I'm in the bag. So like, and then also like the big takeaway from this is try to find the rescue. Cause I feel like that's like I'm going to try to find the rescue because like,
I just want to go watch all those fucking movies, man. Like there were so many that we haven't even mentioned that like, I don't really remember the names of. And
I keep a list of movies that, like, it's literally a list called movies that I remember but don't know the title of but have the plot, like, and have stars. And, like, every once in a while I'll dive into the list to try to find those movies. Because they were so formative, and it's like you would just see them on the fucking, like, and it was beyond just things like The Neverending Story or like Adventures in Babysitting. Like, we're talking about, like I said, like The Rescue, like Flight of the Navigator is one that we both love and Ryan loved. but there's this subset of movies that, like, and they were cheaply produced, right? Like, you remember, like, these things were, like, some of these things were shitty. I remember that much. But you go in there and you go, yeah.
Like, but as a kid, you liked it because you got to live that adventure, because here was somebody, you know, in or around your age, like, exactly, watching them go through that stuff. And it, like... We can say whatever we want about Eli Roth, like, in his, like... career, but
yeah,
he at one point he decided he wanted to make a child's horror movie, The House, yep, with the Clock in Its Walls, and yeah, one of the first things he did was go to Spielberg and try to get advice on, like, making a film for a younger audience and also working with younger actors. And one of the things Spielberg told him was to make it scary. Put the kids in real danger. Not real life, yeah, danger, but on screen, like, real danger. Don't phone it in. Don't hold back. Like, make the danger as real as you possibly can, because that's what's going to sell it to the audience it's meant for. Like, they will know that it's bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I feel like, as much as I love the movie, that's where Little Monsters fails. Like, Little Monsters should have been...
That's another scary one, yes. Like, yep, if they had leaned even harder into that movie, then, yeah. Like, it's still a fun movie, but I haven't seen it in a while. But that Howie Mandel performance is kind of hard to... It's probably... Like, it's... That's the thing that almost got him to Robin Williams level of, like, oh shit, this guy can just go and go and go and go. I mean, the other Fred Savage movie, which doesn't have any supernatural stuff in it, but is very much like kids out there doing it on their own in danger. The Wizard. That's a good one. Cloak and Dagger, that's Cloak a great Dagger one.
And Daryl,
yes,
those two, fuck, dude, those two. Like, Henry Thomas was a fucking dude into an of himself, but then also, like, the kid that was in Daryl kind of reminded me, and for the longest time I thought it was Henry Thomas that was in that, like, the same way that he was in Cloak and Dagger. Fucking Dabney Coleman, only Dabney Coleman, like,
and we just lost him not too long ago.
Fucking Dick Coleman, man. And Cloak and Dagger is fucking great. Like, playing the dad. Like, I just
That's so, like... I watched that movie recently in the last 4 or 5 years. And, yeah, it really... It does hold up.
It hits hard when, like... And only in an 80s movie would you have a moment where, spoiler for a 40-year-old movie, where the kid's imaginary character somehow magically comes to life and saves the kid, but also kills himself, so he's no longer the kid's imaginary friend, thus putting him into teenagerdom, and it's fucking heartbreaking. Like, I love like the Neverending Story because of how hard it goes to the kids. Like, you know, like, it fucking, like, I mean, fucking Atreyu has to watch his fucking horse die. And we all did. And we all cracked. And we all didn't know what the fuck to think.
So, like, I'm going to out myself. I've never seen those movies.
Oh, you haven't? Oh,
no, I have not.
The first one is great. The second, like, if you can find it at what's the place that you guys go? The used
McKay's.
McKay's. If you can find it for $3.99 on Blu-ray, fucking just get it, and you will be like, even if you don't like the movie and you don't like the song, you will be impressed by the production design because it's all practical. So, but I mean, we're talking about a giant turtle that literally was an animatronic turtle. It was like a 5-story tall turtle.
It's one of those things where I've seen like bits and pieces of all of that. And I'm just like, I don't know. It just missed me. Like, I just never got to it. Like, I've never seen the Never Ending Story movies. I've never seen Labyrinth all the way through. And I've never seen The Dark Crystal.
Okay, so The Dark Crystal is hard because it's just, some of it is really boring. Like, really boring. It's amazing puppetry. And that's the thing. It's like, there's too much of this. Look at this amazing puppetry. And we're going to do this long tracking shot where you cannot see any of the strings or the puppetry of it all. It's an amazing movie, but it's so slow. And it's a 2.5-hour movie. It's a 2.5-hour kid movie. So I don't expect anybody to, like, unless you were born in that era, to love it. But I mean, we had a movie called BMX Bandits and Rad, where...
Yeah.
Like, there's a subset of that, of those movies, like Gleaming the Cube, where kids get into problems and
100% the best one, which is, it's got older teenagers and kids, like, runs the gamut.
Yeah.
The fucking legend of Billie Jean.
Oh, fuck yeah. We talked about that last week, dude. Yeah. And in a completely different context. Like it's like one of those movies that it's just like, it's, oh, man, that one, like, if anybody watches anything out of this, I will say watch, like, the top one is watch The Legend of Billie Jean, because that one takes kids, puts them into a very, like, this movie
very
is
real
Louise.
Situation. Oh, very shit. Real situations.
Well, like, when I first saw Thelma and Louise, when I was, like, I saw that way too young. I saw it, like, actually when it was released. I literally thought, because, like, I was in love with The Legend of Billie Jean, I was like, fucking Ridley Scott stole the story from The Legend of Billie Jean and just made it into Thelma and Louise. Because if you think about it, it's the exact fucking story, except for at the end, like, Thelma and Louise jump off a cliff because they've been had by the American justice system, and it's like the positive version and the negative version of each other. But Legend of Billie Jean is so fucking good, and it has like my favorite part about this is it has an amazing Yeardley Smith performance in it that, like, yeah, she's been Lisa, but she is so fucking, like, I wish that more people and, like, more directors had looked at her in this era and went, that's interesting.
Yeah.
We need to use this girl more.
She's the youngest, I think, of the group. Like, because they keep trying to shield her from everything. And, like, that's, there's a lot of interesting dynamics at play in that movie with the young adult child relationships, and anyway, but back to Star Wars. So actually there were two, I don't remember if it was this week or last week, but I know we didn't talk about it, the Rey movie that still may or may not be happening. Everyone says it's still going to happen. They lost another director or writer. They lost somebody.
I think it was the writer that they lost. Okay.
Because they had already lost a director, right?
Yes. I think that it was, like, because it was, I think it was, oh, goddamn, who was it that they had? But they've lost both of them. Like, I think, it was the screenwriter that they lost this week. Last week they lost, or the previous time they lost Sharmeen Obadi Chinoy, who is the director of a lot of the episodes of Ms. Marvel. So they lost her a couple of weeks ago, and then a couple of months ago. But I can't remember who the screenwriter was that they just lost.
This is becoming the Blade of the Star Wars universe. So, which I would like to see more of Rey's stuff, but also where we left that character, I wasn't in love with. So,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, it's all about her starting another Jedi Order, and I'm like, we didn't get the Luke version of this. We just got truncated bullshit about Luke doing this. But we're gonna it ultimately failed the first time. It did take hundreds and hundreds of years. It absolutely failed the second time when Luke did it. So now we're gonna have a character who, is Palpatine lineage. I don't give a shit what she says her last name is. Start another Jedi Order, and she does have the ancient text. I've got that, but also that's what the Jedi were doing too, and look where they wound up. I don't how many times in the Star Wars universe are they gonna repeat history only to have it, you know, I don't know. I don't know why you would have the character do this. It would be more interesting to see chances taken, like her just exploring that rather than I'm starting a new Jedi order. I don't know. It doesn't really ring any bells for me.
No. So. Not at all. And my whole thing is this, is that George never said it, but he kind of did, but I don't think it got through to everybody. His whole point with the sixth trilogy, and I think that they lost it because he lost, as soon as they decided to do the Skywalker, as soon as they decided not to take his storybook and do something else with it, because fucking JJ, and fuck you, JJ, again, fuck you, JJ, for ruining Star Wars, because you really did. But the whole purpose was, he's like the weird funny part about George is that he's still stuck in the 60s in this whole thing of I don't like organizations. And the sixth head of Star Wars basically tells you, good, bad, I don't like organizations. I don't like this stuff.
This mass amount of people trying to come together, even for quote a greater good, it breeds corruption.
150%. And that was his thing. And so but then you go and tell another story that repeats the same thing, that tells us the same stuff, that organizations are not good. They fail. The thing about Rian Johnson, which is hilarious, is that he embedded that into The Last Jedi by telling the Luke story and made it so he put so many bumps in the road, trying to course correct what JJ did, and then JJ just ignored it. That's the real reason why that fucking trilogy doesn't work, is because you have two directors at completely different odds with one another. Go ahead.
Rian Johnson gets them, JJ does get a lot of hate, but a lot of people direct a lot of shit at The Last Jedi, and I'm like, that is the only film in that trilogy that is trying to do something new.
Yeah.
There are problems with it, 100%. But it's trying to do something new. And I'm sorry, the fight scene in the throne room is better than any fucking thing in any of the other movies.
Oh, hell yeah. Well, okay, so I'm going to tell you something that my wife said that I feel I can't get out of my head after it's the first Star Wars sex scene. And if you take a look at it, it kind of is. But it's also the most toxic sex scene that's ever happened, because she gets with the worst dude, right? Like, this is the dude that's not just gonna, he's not gonna ghost her. He wants her.
No, and
he's
it is Mark Wahlberg in
So Let Me in the House.
Yeah, that movie.
I knew exactly what you were talking about. You know
where
what?
It's just like, nah, he's not going to ghost you. He's going to fucking show up at your front door and kick it down and just be so pissed that you're not with him.
Yeah, is wildly mad that you don't, that you didn't, like when he shows you his chest tattoo that says your name for the number four and the word Eva, but it's spelled EVA. Like, you need to see that on his chest and you freak out, and he's mad at you because you freaked out. That's the kind of dude that Kylo Ren, Ben Solo, is. And it's like, fuck, I love that fucking movie. Like, I'm gonna have to go watch The Last Jedi again. Just because it's the only good movie, it's the only good Skywalker trilogy movie out of that trilogy. But yeah, I don't want, like, okay, so like my idea is that if you're gonna have Rey build a new Jedi Order, then she has to take what she learned from Palpatine, which is
like, if you're leaning into that, yes, I'm kind of with you where it's. Not embracing the dark side, but not just being like, we don't fuck with the dark side. Like, we don't do that.
And also take their principles where, like, you can have multiple people, but there's never more than two. Always an apprentice and always a Jedi. And you put them all around the world.
It's fucked up that something that they don't really explore is that, like, you're right. Like, the dark side saw that, like, the more you have, the more, like, they're already corrupt, you know, and out for selfish means. So, but they also understood that, like, their principles dictate that you can't have a mass amount of people because of the corruption that breeds, versus the Jedi Order, who's like, well, you know, we have to spread peace across the galaxy. And it's organized religion.
Yeah.
And it's the Catholic Church. And that, like, becomes like, oh, peace by any means necessary. Like, and then you have the church involved in war and politics. And none of that was their place. Like, the Jedi should not have been involved in political efforts and war, but there they were. Anyway, we could go on that such a tangent about all that. But yeah, so just all to say that, like, the Rey movie still doesn't have a firm, like, start date because they don't have a shooting script, I guess, right now. And are maybe even a director, and that's fine, because I'm not super excited about it anyway. Speaking of taking chances, like, so there's an interview on StarWars.com this week with, I forget who it was, but somebody involved with the production in the prequel trilogy. And he let it be known that up until right before they started filming, I wish George had stuck to his guns and taken the chances he wanted to take, because holy shit, this was mind-blowing. Up until they started, like, right before they started filming, Qui-Gon Jinn was the apprentice, and Obi-Wan Kenobi was the master. Meaning, Liam Neeson would be playing Obi-Wan, and Ewan McGregor would be playing Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yeah, and he's the one that dies.
Well, yeah, at the end, Obi-Wan Kenobi dies.
Yeah.
Is killed by Darth Maul. And in honor of his master, Qui-Gon Jinn takes the name Obi-Wan Kenobi. Which is why when we meet Obi-Wan Kenobi in A New Hope, he says, Now, that's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
And that's fucking wild. Like it's also wild that after 25 years, we're still getting information about this production that was secret until a certain point, right? Like, there's some deep state stuff that I feel like they're still let, like, we're like, if you didn't really listen and you weren't really tuned in, you didn't know, like the casting stuff, like the rumors about casting, like, not even from the first one, but the second one too. Like, there, the second one, we started to get more of like, who were the guys that actually tested, like, actually seriously tested for Anakin. But like, the stuff that we've heard about, like, the different people that could have been Obi-Wan Kenobi, like, that still hasn't been a big thing. Like, and they haven't talked to the actors. Like, I know one of them was, I know that one, like, both Fiennes brothers were a part of that casting process.
Yeah.
Like, Ralph Fiennes as Qui-Gon Jinn was a thing. Like, it was like him and Joseph Fiennes was supposed, like, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like, they were all in the running. Like, there were a lot of big British actors that were in the running for these characters. And I always find it funny that we haven't talked about that and it's kind of been sealed up. And, like, a lot of these things, like, that are coming out are, like, weird-ass fucking things that we didn't know about.
What I find the most interesting about that, because George took a lot of flack, and ultimately I can take a step back and say, like, look at it and be like, he didn't want to rock the boat too much. So the movie didn't take the chances that he initially wanted to take. This would have been a huge thing in episode one. And, like, I don't know how I would have felt about it at the time, but in hindsight now I can look at it and be like, that changes so much of that movie, and also the character of Obi-Wan. It establishes more of, like, who he is when we first met him versus like how to reconcile who he is in the prequels versus who he is in the original trilogy. But the other thing that's never really been confirmed, definitely not by George, is that in the next two movies, at some point, you were going to find out that Obi-Wan and Amidala were kind of a thing. Like, yes. It was a whole, like, love triangle thing.
Yeah, and that was part of the reason why they fought.
Right.
Like, you know, and, like, so, well, the rumor is that he used the Duchess Satine stuff.
Right.
To, like, for the Padme that novel. Back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, which that's, like, he would constantly do. Like, so many concepts got reused down the line. And so, like, that story became, like, the story of Mandalore. And Obi-Wan's involvement there and what all that meant. But yeah, it sucks that he didn't have, like, the conviction to take those chances, because while it would have been very like a line in the sand almost with fandom, because a lot of people would have felt like the way they feel about Rian Johnson, that you're shitting on these characters that we love. I disagree so much with that, because I don't want the characters to be bad, but nobody is fucking all shucks good all the time. You know, like, everybody's wearing masks. We're all, like, it's so much more true to life that, you know, good people fall into bad things.
Yeah, and make bad mistakes. And
yeah.
Make, like, or make gray mistakes that end up becoming a huge deal. And like, it's kind of like, that's why the Clone Wars is so important, is because it takes that dictum, right? Like where the movies are not, and I understand, like, so like, here's the thing. I don't understand Disney, because Disney's not, like, Disney is gambling with house money, right? Like, or like Lucasfilm is gambling with house money at this point. But Lucas was, that was his own goddamn money. Like, that was his, like, he was spending $150 million on these productions. So I understand trying to firm up things and making sure that they are the four quadrant blockbusters that they needed to be. Like, they needed to be, like, Star Wars level successes. So, like, you rub the edges off, especially after everything, all the shit you got from The Phantom Menace, right? Like, the big picture about that was that I did it mostly my way. Like, let's say that Phantom Menace is like 85% George and 15% like thinking as a CEO of a company that has $160 million on the line. Like, that's 15%. But then every movie, you see it's less George the creator and more George the businessman.
Yeah.
Like, and
oh, if we, not that I don't love the massive scene with all the Jedi, but like, hey, if I put all these Jedi in there, that's a lot of action figures. So
yes. No, you're 100% right. Like, it's action figures, and it's fandom not like hating me too much. But like, as we've seen, even now, like, so like, hatred of Star Wars has never not been a thing. Like, I know the 80s, we kind of tend to think about, they're
going back to Jedi for sure.
Oh yeah. Oh, even going back to Empire, because most people hated the ending.
There's been such a rewritten history of that.
Oh, yeah.
That it's mind-boggling how people are like, oh no, it was always like, no, man, people were pissed. Pissed.
Yeah. Because everything bad happened. Like, I don't think people remember that it was the reverse. Like, people love Jedi more than Empire. And over the years, fandom has kind of slowly shifted, and like, they don't remember the rah-rahness of like how that ending like really fucking like the ending of Jedi really, really fucking hit hard for people, because it was a happy ending after this fucking, this Jedi or the Empire thing. That's why I find it hilarious that people are like, that we're still in the hate cycle for The Last Jedi, because it's absolutely the Empire of that trilogy. It's
the shootist, right? Where, like, spoilers for the shootist, but, like, that movie comes, John Wayne, always the hero, always saves the day, always wins, always walks away. The shootist, John Wayne dies at the end. And now it's considered, like, this, like, pivotal Western, brilliant, blah, 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 whatever. But at the time, like, even my dad, who's a big John Wayne fan, like, doesn't acknowledge that movie. He fucking hates it because John Wayne dies at the end. Because that's not what he wanted from his hero. It's why people hate The Last Jedi. It was why people were so... But I think The Last Jedi, for sure, even though critics are definitely more on its side, I think, like, time will tell, and ultimately 15 years from now, like, people, fans will recognize that that is the best part of all of that stuff.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it sucks that George never felt like he could take the chances that he really, really wanted to take in the live action Star Wars. Because partly, like you said, because it also definitely needed to make money, because he didn't have a safety net with that stuff. And, you know, the stories are his, but I think it also says something that, in my opinion, the two best of the original trilogy probably in most people's opinion, at least the best one, is not the script, like the shooting script and the directing are not George Lucas. And Jedi, same way. Like, there were other writers, and there was, he was not the director. He was there, but he was not directing. No. Mostly because he had had a absolute nervous breakdown shooting the first film. And partly because he was now running a company. So, it like reading that really shook me in a good way and like made me really sad that George didn't take the chances he wanted to take, because my God, man, like if they weren't so precious and felt like just everybody, George, Disney now, felt like they had to like safeguard Star Wars from even its own fandom, then I mean, what kind of stories would we have? Fucking take chances with this shit. I will, like, Feige and company, yes, ultimately, like, don't take as many chances as they should. But, and they do, in the end, always, like, play it safe. Because they still have that continuing story to tell. But they are out there taking chances, you know? Like, it is based in the comics, so it's hard to just give them credit. But, I mean, look, like a movie like Civil War, while they make a lot of changes from the comics, like one of the biggest is the reasoning. Like, to my knowledge, that's not necessarily a, it may be part of a story in the comics, but I don't remember the whole, like, oh, Bucky killed Tony's parents thing. And that's huge, because not only like it gives you such sympathy for Tony, but it further like demonizes Bucky, even though he's not doing under his own power, and it creates this like Cap was such this wholesome, like, through line of a character. And here you have him hiding this massive secret.
Yeah. And in this case, it's like a good guy makes one mistake, whereas Tony is a, is not a good guy, but happens to make altruistic decisions that are good. That's what makes Civil War so great. Is the fact that, like, nobody is perfect. Not even Captain America is perfect. There's always a weak spot. And Baron Zemo knew,
we will do, like, the wrong thing trying to do the right thing.
The right thing. Like, exactly.
Zemo, that is, you're right. Another good example of, like, how can you not feel for what this character went through? And still recognize, like, what you're doing is not okay, man. But, like, it's so simplifying to just be like, well, hurt people. But, like, that is the concept at the core of that. Like, this man's life was changed so drastically by shit that he had no interest in, no control over, no stake in, was not even invested it in it in any way, shape, or form. Shit that just happened. And he was like, this should not happen to anybody else, and I'm gonna find a way to make sure it doesn't. And is he the bad guy? Yeah, but not really. Like, that morally complex thing that they're able to do. And Star Wars just doesn't really want to lean into that. I think The Last Jedi tried to lean into that, like, and make Luke a little bit morally complex. Because, I mean, it's pretty fucked up that, like, all of this shit's going on. And the dude who saved the galaxy once and helped blow up two Death Stars, is just like, fuck off. I'm on my island. I'm grumpy. All of this is bullshit. Leave me alone.
So here's the thing is like the thing that we don't give George credit for. Motherfucker was having to kill his dad. And at a certain point, like, this is where the moral complexity started with the Jedi, which is that Yoda tells him in his dying breath, this motherfucker tells him his dying breath, you have to kill your father. What? He's your father. It doesn't, like, he doesn't know. We don't, like, he didn't, Yoda didn't say, yeah, you have to kill your father. And by the way, he's a child killer.
Yeah.
He's a serial killer. He's a genocide provoking motherfucker, and he killed a bunch of children.
George was always interested in those concepts.
Exactly. And like the thing is that like in Jedi, the thing that we don't like, the thing that nobody talks about, and this is the reason why it's funny to me, because we're watching these movies and we get so pumped up, but the thing that we don't take away from it, if we take away and we go to, like, as Obi-Wan said, the moral high ground, if we take the high ground, we can take a look at it and go, that is some fucking seriously fucked up shit that you actually, like, both you and the Emperor were basically one and the same, wanting you to kill your father. How fucked up is that? And the way that Luke at the end goes, steps back and goes, you motherfuckers are trying to make me kill my dad. I'm not going to do it. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. You're
okay. And ultimately, that's the thing that saves Anakin Skywalker.
Yes.
Like, yeah, we could definitely, like, there's so much shit to talk about with all of that. And yeah, it's wild that we have stuff like that. Those are the chances. Those are the risks, the things we want to see in Star Wars. Like, people will say they don't want that, but I don't think Revenge of the Sith, I actually think it's the worst of the prequel trilogy. I know people disagree with me, but the one thing that movie does have that the other two prequels don't have is that morally complex thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, it's kind of in Attack of the Clones with like Anakin getting married and like his affair with Amidala, and that's part of it, him killing the Tusken Raiders. But that's also why I think that's part of why I think that's the best of the prequel trilogy. But the morally complex stuff in Revenge of the Sith is the only truly good part of that movie.
Yeah.
And you know, that's in, it's not in A New Hope necessarily.
Mm-mm.
You can come back to A New Hope and see stuff there. Like, once you know everything, you can look at Obi-Wan and see, some people still don't want to see it, but this very manipulative old man.
Yes. a man that comes from, like, so, like, the thing that
I also love, like, that this firms up my Obi-Wan shit. Like, hearing this story, I'm like, yeah, like, George was always writing this old man as not who he says he is. He was always writing that.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it's the whole thing of like, at the end of the day, there's no difference between the Empire and the Jedi, because what happens at the end, like, the thing that I love the most about Revenge of the Sith is this motherfucker kills his best friend because he's not doing what the Jedi want him to do, right? Yeah. But here's the worst part, is that you don't even kill him. You fucking maim him and torture him and leave him to die. You leave him to die.
It's more of a mercy. Like, it sounds fucked up to say, but like, Anakin's mom gets taken by Tusken Raiders. He goes to rescue her, and he kills everyone.
Yep.
he kills them. He doesn't maim them and leave them to die. He kills them.
Yep.
Obi-Wan, like you said, like, oh, you're not doing this the way we believe is proper. And there's some other shit there too, for sure. But like, I'm going to cut off your arm and your legs and, you know, let this river of lava kind of come up and set you on fire. But I'm not going to put you out of your misery. I'm just going to leave you there.
Yeah. I want you to think upon what you did. Like, that's fascist mentality. There's no difference between the Jedi and the Empire.
When Anakin comes out of that, when he's rescued, why would, like, yeah, destroy, like, he was already on the, like, Palpatine had it in him, like, oh, you have to destroy the Jedi. But when you come out of that, it's like, yeah, the Jedi are all bastards. Like, they need to, all of them need to die. Like, of course you're on that mission, man. Like,
yeah. Of course you're going to be an acolyte. You're going to be the biggest, brightest, shiny star for the Emperor, because think about it. Like this is the thing that I think that people really don't get, is that Mace Windu was a dick to him. Everybody was a dick to Anakin. When he needed love and compassion, which Qui-Gon would have given him, and all he got was the fascism of an organization that was fascist, that just did it with a smile. Like, I mean, and that's the kind of beauty of what the Acolyte was trying to do, but just didn't do it very well. Yeah, just didn't do it.
Like, it didn't, like, the morally complex part, which is the most interesting part of that, was very rushed and glossed over, and and they just didn't firm it up. But yeah, hopefully Star Wars is getting to a better place. Let's talk about the other Disney property that we're super high on right now. You want to talk about Agatha first, or the barrage of, like, seemingly good stuff that we have coming our way?
Let's talk about the barrage, and then we'll close with Agatha. I feel like that's, like, the kind of best way to go. We got that trailer. So, like, first you sent me something about the leak, and then we officially got this trailer that they're putting on in front of everything on Disney Plus, about what's coming soon. It was like a flash reel, right? Like a taste of whatever we're getting next.
It's fair to say that Marvel television has been mostly miss with the occasional, like, that's really good. Like, we have outliers. Both seasons of Loki, very solid. Most of WandaVision, very solid. Most of Miss Marvel, very solid. Most of What If, solid.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, everything else, like, Falcon and Winter Soldier, like, there's reasonings, but, like, Falcon and Winter Soldier, like, there's some good stuff there. Moon Knight starts great, absolute bust, for me, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Hawkeye, most predominantly solid, like, you know, but...
I know how Hawkeye could have been solved, but they would have never have had the budget to do it. Yes. Like, because I recently rewatched it, which was a bad decision because I should have waited till Christmas time, because it's literally a Shane Black Christmas movie, right? Like, told over things. But we'll get to that eventually, but that's just a side note. But yes, they don't know how to close. Like, it's a problem. Like, with most of the TV, they don't know how to close. It becomes this whole thing of, like, CGI nonsense without a purpose. And, you know, that's my assessment of, like, the worst of them. But yes, like for the most part, we've had, like, good stuff. Like, at the very minimum, if it's a 10-episode show, at least 6 of those episodes are crackling good. Like, they're, like, good TV, right?
Yeah.
Followed by me. But anywho, continuing on.
So, that brings us to Agatha, which we'll talk about in a minute, which has been miraculously great. But what's coming next? This sizzle reel. We have this year, seemingly, the final season of What If. Which looks to tackle all kinds of things. Like, I don't even know where to start there.
Yeah. Well, okay, so, like, can we just say that What If is so big, and the promise of part one, which I was super mad that they didn't get to, but what I didn't realize was they set up Marvel Zombies to be its own fucking thing.
Yes.
Its whole entire, like, we got Marvel What If, but all of this stuff that's in it is a completely, it's without Marvel Zombies. And I was so mad. I was like, what the fuck, man? We aren't getting Marvel Zombies? Like, that would be what you'd be, oh, it's because it's a whole damn TV show, like a whole, yep, its own thing, right? Which, like, how do you dissect, like, the What If stuff? Like, there's Shang-Chi the cowboy.
Yeah, so we know episodes are going to include the Red Guardian, Winter Soldier, yes, both voiced by their on-screen actors. Bill Foster from the second Ant-Man movie, voiced by Lawrence Fishburne. A new character named Ranger Morales, voiced by America Ferrara. And then we're going to have Western and Japanese mecha episodes, Shang-Chi, which will be interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. White Vision, Ironheart are both going to appear. And then, of course, the Watcher will be part of all of it. So there's a lot there. They're going to, it looks like they're going to just do what they did last year and air all of them kind of like over a week or 2 week period, like over Christmas break. Which, you know, kind of sucks to burn through them, but also, like, I don't know, I enjoy it. So it's yes, nice, to have that kind of lull.
To have that, like, where nothing is happening in TV, to have this one section where every couple of days we're getting new episodes and we're getting, like, batches of three to get us through from Christmas. Like, it literally starts December 22nd, and it looks like they're giving three-episode chunks every 3 days until the end of the year. Like, until the end of the year, which was what they did, was it last year or the year before? It was 2022, right?
No, it's 2023. It was last year.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Which is why I was shocked when they were like, what if? And I was like, what? Like, yep, this was already in the bag for the most part. Like, that, they knew that they had a season, which we knew a season three was coming, but yep, they knew at the end of last year that they had season three. Like, there was no, to my knowledge, no indication that we were getting season three this year. I thought for sure it would be next year.
Yeah. Well, like, yeah, like it was going to be like the 2024 cycle, the end of the year into 2025 or 2025 into 2026. Jesus Christ, I'm losing my years. But like, yeah, like I didn't realize it was that finished. Like literally they have been working on this, right? Because I feel like the Marvel Zombies and then the Wakanda, the stories from Wakanda, they're from the same, like, they're using the same studios to make this stuff. I wonder if they were already in production with What If, and they were they basically were completing it while they were starting up these other two series. Yeah. Because I'm right? Like, the Tales from Wakanda is, even though it's, like, written by, like, it's literally written by Ryan Coogler.
We'll get the Tales of Wakanda.
Yeah.
After, yeah, What If, I'm doing it in chronological order.
Okay.
So after What If, in January, we're going to get Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, yet another Marvel animated show, which is a prequel to the Spider-Man MCU movies.
Which, man, like, just the small scenes of it look hella fun.
The animation looks really unique and maybe not completely unique to Marvel so far, because mostly, yes, all we've got is the CGI kind of, like, animated stuff. So this will be more of a cell shading kind of 2D animation, which,
yes,
you know, makes it different, makes it fun. We're going to have Spider-Man universe characters introduced in this show that we have yet to see in the MCU, including Norman Osborn, voiced by Colman Domingo.
Yeah, which was wild. Like, I was like, okay, like, does that mean that Colman Domingo, like, does that mean that we, like, okay, so this is a little side conversation, because, like, I was doing my deep diving and I knew we were going to cover this. And so, like, my question is about this is, does that mean, are we going to get Harry and Norman in part four?
Maybe. Like, that would be really, really interesting.
And do we cast, like, I love Colman Domingo. Like his work is, I mean, like, just the thought of, like, him being this universe's answer to Willem Dafoe makes it such an interesting contrast in character. Like, that's wild. Like it's wild.
So there are tons of other characters, but one we definitely know is coming, they said, is Amadeus Cho is going to be in this show. Here's the one thing. Like, if the Incredible Hulk is canon to Marvel, which it, the MCU, which it should be, Amadeus Cho is in that movie. So that makes this a little complicated. If they're just going to ignore that they introduced Amadeus Cho in that movie, that's fine. Most people don't even consider the Incredible Hulk, really. That's fine if they're going to ignore it. But if you don't know, Amadeus Cho becomes a Hulk, like the totally awesome Hulk is who he becomes. But he is a science-based, like, character, younger character. So kind of vibes with Peter. They're gonna
setting them up for Young Avengers. Like, let's be honest. Like, that's kind of where, like, I feel like this is like groundwork for Young Avengers for probably Phase 7. Like, I mean, like, though I don't know. Like, I don't know, but it feels like all of the choices that they're making feel like that's where they're headed to. Even though by the time Young Avengers come around, a lot of these kids are
they're going to be way too young.
Yeah, seriously.
So, but anyhow. Other characters, Nico Minoru, who, if you read the comics, is from the Runaway series, but she's a sorcery-based character, which means Doctor Strange also appearing, Daredevil's appearing, tons of villains, the Wizard, Chameleon, Scorpion, Speed Demon, Rhino, like, even Doc Ock, I think, is on the slate. Like, and they're already at work on season two, supposedly. This show has been in the works for a while, so season two is probably close to being finished. It looks a lot like a lot of fun. So, it's going to be interesting to see if they take chances and if it does wind up not being actually officially part of the MCU, like whether the stuff that's established in it is canon. I don't know. We'll see. But it's going to be fun to have an animated Spider-Man
on
TV again. So hopefully it isn't a dump either. Like, I would like for this show to be released weekly, but, you know, time will tell. After that, in theaters, of course, we don't have to get into Brave New World. We've talked about the trailer for Captain America Brave New World. That's in February. That was part of the sizzle reel, although I don't think we saw anything necessarily new in the sizzle reel.
No, we didn't. I mean, I watched this thing fucking like five times and I slow motioned it through. Like, I did one thing where, like, because YouTube, you can slow things down. Like, I did a slow version of it and there was nothing new. Not like Daredevil, which is, I think, the next thing.
Yep. March 4th. Like, it's almost like every fucking month, at least for like the first 6 months of the year. March 4th, Daredevil. Born Again premieres, like I don't know, like what to say. I am so excited. Charlie Cox back. We've got the Kingpin. There's potentially so many Daredevil villains that could appear. Bullseye is rumored. I don't know if he's confirmed.
I have to ask this: is like, who do we think? Like, do we think that he's going to, like, are they going to do it? Like, are they going to recast?
No, I everything I've read is that they're going to use who has already been cast. Those shows are canon, okay, and those characters are canon. So unless it's just an availability issue, that's who they're going with. So we may even see Maya Lopez, aka Echo. I can't remember. There's a newer Daredevil villain. Definitely getting the Punisher, probably getting the other Defenders characters from the Netflix series. We'll probably see Luke Cage. We'll probably see Jessica Jones. We may see Iron Fist. I know that's a point of contention with a lot of people.
Or maybe he's like, okay, so like, let's be honest. If he's there, he's there to do one thing, and that's die gloriously.
I mean, yeah. I can't remember the name of the new Daredevil villain that they're bringing into the world. But like, if you saw the trailer, you saw him. He has like a white face and like these really dark eyes that are like dripping black. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of the villain from the comics, but they're bringing him in. We saw some brief footage that of course looks fucking phenomenal. Like, I just cannot wait.
Yes. And there's the thing that I want to like kind of broach, which is that like the footage is both evocative of the Netflix dourness of it all, but I also feel like there's a poppiness and a wit to it that feels like Marvel. It really does feel like they've merged it together, because I'm not the biggest, like, I'm a fan of the Daredevil stuff, but I am not a
it
fan
is very of, dour very yes, dour.
It's very okay, like when I was a kid I loved Frank Miller, but as I grew up I'm like, you're a fucking little fucking tool, dude, you're a fucking fascist piece of shit, because all you do, he's Zack Snyder. I mean, yeah, like as much as I respect his shit, he's Zack Snyder. He takes the fun and joy out of
things. Like, that's part of Daredevil's charm. Lot of people would be like, well, that's just Spider-Man. And I get it, but like, that is part of his charm, is that the cat, like, he's a swashbuckling cavalier character. That, like, that's who he is, you know? And you lost a lot of that with the Netflix Daredevil show, which was kind of rooted in the Frank Miller stuff, much like the Punisher stuff was rooted in Garth Ennis's stuff. Not being lighthearted with the Punisher, because like that's a very tragic story. So
yeah. I mean, but like I said, like it fucking looks like they did the melding and they did it right. And it's going to still be R-rated. Like, I feel like that's something that you can't get away from. Like, you have to make certain concessions, right? It's going to be MA. Like, you have to, right? Like, there's just no way around it. The way that you're dealing with it, there has to be some give and take, right? And especially when you're dealing with the Punisher, you would do a disrespect to fandom by neutering him and making him a palpable character. Because I'm of the theory that you really should make him a villain. Like a truly fucking threatening villain.
That's the interesting dynamic for me, at least in the comics, always so interesting about Punisher and Daredevil, is that Daredevil definitely sees him as a bad guy.
Yes. And doesn't want anything to do with him. Like, that's the thing that I do love. Like,
It's fun. Like, I look at this and you say Zack Snyder and I'm like, Zack Snyder was playing in the wrong universe. He should have been playing in the MCU because, like, a Zack Snyder Punisher might have actually been fucking phenomenal. So,
Like, if you, like, an Unchained R-rated, like, we would have probably got, like, I know this sounds, like, insulting, but it's not, because I love the cranked fucking lunacy of it all, and I own the movie, Punisher Warzone. Like, to me, like, I love that movie because it's so deranged, because it's so R-ratedly fucking,
but like, it is a little batshit, and, like, that's kind of the point of it, but, like, to have a Punisher that's also uber violent, but also mired in, like, the super dramatic seriousness of something like Man of Steel without all the, like, superhuman elements, and not getting zany, would have definitely been interesting. I did say every month, but I do think it's interesting that they don't have anything for April. Daredevil has all of March and April in the MCU to itself.
Yeah, well,
and I think that's really important.
No, absolutely. And it's 12 episodes, right? Or are they doing the whole thing in one shot?
I think they're splitting it up because it was like it's like 25 episodes total, I think.
Yeah.
It was a lot of episodes that they greenlit. But I think it's over 2 years.
Okay. Big point.
Unless, like, they're airing it two episodes at a time.
Which I wouldn't mind. Like,
a Daredevil movie every week? No, yes, please give me that.
Yeah. Seriously. But okay, like, here's the big thing for me about this show is, like, they know how important it is, so they clear the schedule, right? Like, this is what we lead into once we get to the Thunderbolts. Now, that doesn't mean that this is connective tissue to the Thunderbolts.
Absolutely not.
But they're trusting this as being the showcase. But also, like, the thing that I love about it is Benson and Moorhead are like, after a big kerfuffle and them not liking anything that they were shooting, they dumped everything. And they reassessed, and then they hired Benson and Moorhead based off of all of their and reshot the entire thing. But I'm going to tell you, Benson and Moorhead to me are like the dudes that should be show running, like should be high level doing everything in the Marvel TV universe, because I feel like Loki season 2 is low-key the best thing. Like, for me, is low-key the best thing in Marvel TV. Like, hands down, not even Loki season 1. Like, and that is with the whole garbage of Jonathan Majors being in it. Like, in fact, because of Jonathan Majors being in it, I feel like it's, like, so them having, like, that tells me the importance of Marvel, of Daredevil to them. And also the clearing of the schedule, like, that really tells me a lot, right? Like, doesn't it? Like, it tells me that they have trust and faith in what they've seen. And they're like, nah, this is your time to shine. So even if it is 12 episodes, that's still 3 months. That's 3 months worth of episodes. So if you do a 3-episode, I guarantee you it's like the first drop is like 3 episodes. And it totals like close to 3 hours. It's like a whole minute. Hell,
maybe it's 24 episodes over 3 years. Maybe we only get 8-episode clips. I don't know. There might be something out there that tells us, but like whatever it's going to be, like I'm super excited for all of this because then in May, the May 2nd, we get Thunderbolts, which again, we've talked about, we don't have to delve into it. Looks so much fucking fun. And then in at the end of June, we get, which Daredevil will be wrapped one way or the other. Daredevil will be wrapped by June because in June comes Ironheart.
Yeah, which
this is our first real footage of this show.
Absolutely. And okay, so can we just stop for a minute and go, so they told that, like, this has been filmed what, like, for like 18 months now? Like, we've known about this, like yeah, the production happened 18 months ago. I now understand why it's been 18 months, because, like, if this footage is indicative of the entire show, man, Marvel really took that whole thing of, like, your TV end and their VFX work is shit, and made sure that nobody is going to say the same fucking thing about Ironheart. Like, this literally looks like something that could have been put on the big screen.
Yeah. Like, the footage we saw, ultimately, time will tell, we'll see the end product, but the footage mm-hmm. we saw looks absolutely phenomenal.
Phenomenal. Like they didn't skimp out on the budget.
Do you think that the reaction, not the reaction to She-Hulk as a story, the reaction to the effects work in She-Hulk is ultimately what possibly delayed this show?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and then the dropout, because, like, you know, Victoria Alonso took the fucking hit for that. Yeah. They literally made her into the villain because she was blamed for the overtime. She was blamed for the unreasonable schedules. She was blamed for...
As if there was not somebody over her, Feige or whoever, yeah, saying, like, no, we need this. We need this. We got to have it. Yeah, it's... Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate, and not giving her a complete and total out, because I'm a firm believer of, like, no matter what, if you are a manager, no matter what your boss is saying to you, your job is to do right by the people under you. Like, if you gotta take the hit, but, like, if you need to be looking out for the people under you. So if she knew it was unreasonable, rather than, you know, like, caving and, quote, cracking the whip, that's probably a bad way to phrase that, but, like, pushing harder against her people under her, like, stand up for your people, you know? So she's not off the hook, but, like, it's weird that she is the sole, like, thing that it got pinned on.
Like, she's the fall. She's literally the fucking fall guy. But I absolutely think that was exactly the reason why we, like, they were like, nope, let's go ahead and put $200 million into this show's VFX. It was the 1-2 combination, right? It was that, and then Secret Wars, because Secret Wars looked terrible too.
Secret Invasion.
Secret Invasion, sorry, not Secret Wars. I keep on doing that, and I'm sorry, because, like, you know,
it's weird that Marvel has so many secret shit. It's like DC with their infinite everything. Crisis or whatever, man. Like, we get it. You're always in crisis. Like, Marvel, exactly. We get it. It's always secret. Like, so we have Ironheart after Thunderbolts. Ironheart's going to have about a month and a half, 2 months of runway to itself. And then in July, we get Fantastic Four, which, again, we've talked about ad nauseum, so we don't have to really get into Fantastic Four. We didn't see anything like for Fantastic Four.
No, which, like, okay, so, like, I'm gonna say it doesn't bother me. It doesn't concern me.
No. It's way too. What's alarming to me is that, like, I don't. Is this movie actually going to be finished in time? Like, I know they've been shooting, but, like, how the fuck are they going to have this movie finished? Like, James Gunn is wrapped on, well, maybe not completely wrapped, but Superman is mostly done, probably some reshoots, but, like, it's in kind of post-production right now, because we're going to get a trailer soon. So, I know that movie is going to be ready. I don't know how this movie is going to be ready.
Okay, so let's be honest. Like, they're doing it with the hope that it's going to be finished, but I can guarantee you, it is a November movie.
Yeah.
Or December movie. Like, Like, I know that that gets in the way of Avatar this year, because we are getting an Avatar movie this year, I think, in 2026. They said there's 2026, 2027, 2028. Like, we're getting three or four in 2029. We're getting, like, they're, like, but we'll see about that. That's a completely different story. But I just don't feel like it's going to be done. Unless they started working on it sooner than we thought that they did. And the post-production... the post-production for the VFX is such to where it's already been worked out, but I don't think so. Like, it feels like it's something that's going to get delayed another 6 months. We just haven't heard it yet. Right. Like, but you're right. Like, July, I mean, it's fucking wild that we're getting two very, 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 like, how can I say this? Like, it, like, they're the flagships, even though people, like, you know, are like, Fantastic Four, Tim Story, stupid. Make no doubt, like, MCU, like, this is the golden child. This is the thing that they have, like, they have to get right, because, like, the Fantastic Four are the Kennedys, or whatever you want to call it, the family of families. They are essentially, like, analogous to Superman in the way that they are, like, the elevated thing, the thing that if you don't get right at this point, it's going to crumble things a little bit. I mean, I feel the same way about Superman. Superman is that thing where they've done it multiple times now, and it didn't work. It hasn't worked since the 78 Donner movie. And I know that people are probably tired of both of us kind of ping-ponging back and forth about the 78 Donner, like, oh, get enough of it. Yeah, well, when you have something that's as kind of beautiful as that movie, in that era, you don't shake it. You can't shake it. Even Gunn knows that. Gunn knows that so much that he's leaning into a Gunn version of, like, he's not even, like, you can tell he's not even doing Superman, like, the Donner way, the way that everybody else has approached it, either the antithesis or, like, you know, the complete opposite of Donner or right into Donner. Like, he's just doing, I'm going to do James Gunn, like, as making Crypto a character, right? But going back to the Fantastic Four, unless you want to comment on something I was saying, like, it's wild that we're this close to it and we haven't gotten a trailer. We're not getting a trailer. I mean, like, I don't think
we might have a teaser in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
But I would guess that the first trailer for Fantastic Four is going to be attached to Thunderbolts. Yeah.
I know. Wild, right? Like, but I mean, they have a whole, they have two huge CGI characters that they have to invent.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still, like, wilding out about that. Unless they're deciding to do, what's his name, on set.
No, I think it's going to be mocap. I think they've already said it's going to be mocap. Like, it's going to be interesting to see, like, if they can get this done. And I think there's a lot of pressure to stick to that release date, but we'll see. Assuming we get that in July, literally a few weeks later, maybe not even a week later, we get Eyes of Wakanda in August, on August 6th. As of right now, the premiere of Eyes of Wakanda, which is another animated series based in the Black Panther universe. And, like, plot wise, what we know is it's only four parts. So it's only four episodes, animated show about the Wakandan war dogs who are tasked to travel the world, retrieving dangerous vibranium artifacts. And that sounds awesome.
Yes. Like, and everything we've heard, all of the cast, like, the cast that, like, all of the cast from Black Panther are coming back to voice the characters that they voice, or that they normally, yeah, like, they've starred in. We've also heard that Ryan Coogler is actually show running this thing. Like, he actually made sure
it's
that he
Coogler and Todd Harris, who was part of the What If crew and worked on Wakanda Forever and also John Wick Chapter 4. So yes. So yeah, it looks interesting. And honestly, I like of all the movies, properties, whatever, MCU, exploring the world of Wakanda, like, I think it sucks that it's taken us this long to get to that point, because there's a lot there. And but the flip side of that is hopefully that means they've taken the time to really get it right. Wakanda Forever took a lot of, I don't want to say heat, but like that movie is what it is, success or fail, and they made the best with what they had, because that was not the movie that we were supposed to get. And we all know that. So, then in October of 2025 on Disney Plus, another animated show, which you talked about earlier, Marvel Zombies, also four parts. So, you know, I like that they're not stretching themselves too thin with these new animated shows. But yeah, we're getting our own Marvel Zombies thing. And yes. Whatever it's going to be, it's probably going to be a lot of fun. So I think the only thing we really know, I don't think we know anything plot-wise, but it's Brian Andrews, who worked on What If, and Zeb Wells, who is all over comicdom and geekdom, but comes from Robot Chicken. Originally, I think he's worked in the Marvel Comics proper for quite a long time. It's gonna be fun. Ultimately, it's a show that doesn't matter, because the outside of Multiverse of Madness, the zombie stuff hasn't really been introduced into the MCU proper. But that's okay. Just having a fun show that gives us kooky versions of our heroes and villains. One thing we do know, because we saw him in the trailer, fucking zombie Thanos with the Infinity Gauntlet, that's wild, man. I cannot wait to see what they do with it. And then in December of 2025, Simon Williams makes his debut proper in the series Wonder Man, which we got a lot of footage from. So it sucks that it's over a year away.
And that tells me A, they're confident, but also B, that the work that they're they know that they have to get the effects right. I like the approach that they're taking. I love Ben Kingsley
coming back, man.
Yes. That's the
Trevor Slattery from Iron Man 3. That sounds like so much fun.
Well, also it gives us, okay, so the thing that we know also is that he survives. He's fine. Yeah. And he's he's out in the world. He doesn't have to stay. He isn't staying within the world of Shang-Chi, right? At least that's what it's kind of like, unless the time a little weirder.
This show is headed up by Destin Daniel Cretton, who directed Shang-Chi. So it would be not necessarily a surprise if we get some stuff from that. I don't really know Yahya Abdul-Mateen. He was in Watchmen and he was in Aquaman. He's great in Watchmen, but I think what he had to do in Watchmen, I don't want to say it wasn't difficult, but there's something there to that establishes what that character needs to be. Wonder Man is a wholly unexplored character, other than seeing a poster in Guardians 2, I think. And that does ultimately doesn't really mean anything. So this is going to be created whole cloth. You've got to bring something. I know Andrew Guest is writing at least some of the episodes. He worked on Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Community. Just hearing Community, MCU has a great track record of working with Community folks. Anyway, like it looks incredibly fun and funny and wacky and in that She-Hulk vein. And so, like, I'm really excited, but also bummed that we have to wait over a year to see this show. But what a sizzle reel, man. Like, and also, I don't know if anybody remembers. I know we do. I'm pretty sure it was the beginning of this year that we were told we've got to slow down on the MCU stuff. You're not going to see as much as we've been putting out. And then we get this, like, it's every other month next year, we're getting an MCU show. And
yeah. Like, wow.
Yeah. So I mean, it very much feels like, unless something here absolutely falls on its face, and nothing I've seen from any of it looks like it will. The one thing I'm just like, because we haven't seen anything, is Fantastic Four. It gives me so much anxiety thinking about if that fails. But that's where we are. And
yeah.
But I know we're going to run a little bit long this week. So that leads us to where we just ended Agatha All Along, who gave us our last two episodes this week. And holy shit, what a way to wrap the show.
So, okay. So for me, I like the content. I had to watch it twice because my first viewing of it, I was like, I think it would have worked better if we didn't get both episodes, because it made me feel like this could have been re-edited for my tastes a little bit better. Ultimately,
specifically the last episode, right?
Yes. So, okay. So, like, here's my big
which problem. Felt like both a preamble to the show itself and a yes. post-credit scene. Absolutely. It's like, here's all this stuff we didn't have time for in the show proper. Although, I'm with you here. They could have taken, like, the meat of that last episode and sparsed it out over the course of every episode before that, and it would have just been 8 episodes. And
yes,
part of me feels like that was the original idea.
But they changed
their mind and made it a 9th episode, and the actual show ended with, like, there was a whole, like, 5-10 minute post credit scene with I don't even think it was 5 minutes with the Billy and Agatha stuff at the end of them. Okay, let's go find Tommy.
Yeah. And so it's a mess. It's a narrative fucking mess. Because realistically, if you made episode 8 a 90 or a 75 minute episode with 10 minutes of credit, so it would have been a 90 minute episode. And you put the popper for me would be the end credit scene or the mid credit scene. Is what's her name coming out of ground, and then the final scene would have been the 5 minutes, like you were saying, the 5 minutes of Tommy and Agatha, and them finally making peace that she's going to be around. And by the way, terrible effects. I know that they didn't have the budget for it, but
oh, the ghost thing.
Oh God!
Yeah, it didn't look great. I am with you on that final episode. I like everything that's in there.
Yes,
but the way they did it isn't exactly perfect. It is a little narratively muddy because of, you know, everything else that's happened. I'm glad, but I will say this, rather than completely truncate it from the show and us not really get to find out any of that stuff, I'm glad that we still got it.
Oh, absolutely. Like, but there's a way to do it. In episode 8, you put that at the beginning before you go on the road, and then that justifies everything that you talk about with Rio and Death and Agatha. Like, you don't need to do, like, there's no reveal, right? We know who she is now. So, like, after the episode 7, if you jump right into why Agatha is the way that she is and what she's doing, that final moment gives her more menace.
I feel like the reason you can't have that is because of the reveal that the road doesn't exist. Like, they ultimately decided they have to save that for Billy returning home and finding out that the road didn't exist, that he created that.
Yes.
And that it was all, because if you get that flashback, it all hinges on Agatha just taking advantage of people thinking that the road exists and using that to steal witch's powers for centuries. But that aside, the narrative structure of it aside, which I do agree with you, I think there would have been a better way around, but I think they just maybe got tired of trying to figure out how to approach it and ultimately just went with, like, we're going to make a 9th episode. This will be at the end. That way the reveal of Billy discovering that he created the road is intact. Because ultimately, you know, the show didn't, like, it had a lot of secrets, but it didn't do a huge, like, it didn't do a lot of work of trying to cover up that, like, no, this is Wiccan. No, it's all tied to WandaVision. It didn't really cover it up that well. And I appreciate that, like, those weren't surprises. That, oh, he wasn't Wiccan. It really was Nicholas all along. And I appreciate that they didn't do any of that bullshit. That, like, it was, like, what we thought it was. I think he, when he shows up in the Wiccan costume, I was like, it was very much like when Scarlet Witch showed up as the fucking Scarlet Witch.
Scarlet Witch, yes. Like,
such a good callback to that. All that to say, like, in the end, like, everything they did, it's ultimately successful. Even narratively, if it's muddy, the show works so fucking well.
Yeah. No, it does. It does. Like, as a whole, I now know what should have happened is that they should have, because they title the titles, it should have been called Postscript. Because then that allows them to do whatever the hell they're going to do and do all this stuff. Because that's, like, it really deterred me from, like, really enjoying the last two episodes of the show, because it really bothered me that it was so narratively jaunty. Like, watching it now, like, watching it a second time with the knowledge that it was fucking wild that they did it this way, it's a lot more palpable. And I understand, because it was a lot of info dump. And that's the problem I have ultimately.
But that I definitely, with that last episode, I agree with you that it is a massive info dump. And they just, like I said, it feels like they didn't know what to do with it to sparse it out in the show as a whole, because of how much it reveals. Because it tells us the truth about her son. It tells us the truth about her. It tells us the truth about the road. Which we kind of already knew the truth about her, but they couldn't make it work in the show proper, so it just became this 35-minute post-credit scene.
it really was a 35-minute post-credit scene. It was like, oh, by the way, like, that's why I say, like, it's almost like an appendices. Like, you want them to say postscript. And so that that you understand, because it ends, okay, like, here's the thing, is that episode 8 ends so beautifully, right? Like, yeah. With the whole thing of, like, Agatha, like, and the flower bed, and, like, what that means, witch-wise, like, Wiccan-wise, like, everything kind of, like, perfectly, like, and that's what I was thinking, like, you know, when I was watching it, when I watched it the first time, I was like, oh, this is great. I was like, and I thought, like,
the stuff with myself. Aubrey Plaza, man, like the all of the death stuff, like, it's so and, like, okay, I know you, I'm with you on the ghost effect is a little hokey, but I also think hokey is kind of what they were going for there, but
yes,
I am with you that it is a little hokey. Aubrey Plaza turning to look at Wiccan
and
literally as fucking death
was
good.
it was good.
Oh shit. It's very brief, but, like, they definitely got that right. And, like, it also feels like a big middle finger to, like, they were so convinced that nobody would buy death as a concept and Thanos' obsession with that, and that's the reason, like, and I get it. I get what they did is fine, but yeah. Aubrey Plaza as death would have fucking worked. Like, much like, this would have worked. You didn't think it would, and it does.
It does. Like, okay, so, like, that was ultimately what I was thinking about. Like, I went back and I was like, Josh Brolin totally would have been a fucking simp for Aubrey Plaza. Like, if you had the foresight to be able, like, but here's the thing. The Russos would have never.
No,
they tried to
trying to, like, have this political bend to it, and, like, that's what they were leaning into. I mean, that's in a lot of their MCU work. Like, it has this morally, politically, like, charged thing. So to deviate from that and have it be, like, this character obsessed with this physical embodiment of death and how beautiful she is. But then that's what Agatha has. And
yes. It
works as this driving force of, like, she has a toxic relationship with the physical embodiment of death.
Yeah.
And it works. So
it does.
So, like, yes, we didn't get that with Thanos, but, like, we did get it here. It's fantastic. Like, everything in that, when I'm going to say last episode, but for me, as I'm sure with you, like, the last episode of this show was episode 8. Episode 9 is total postscript. So, in that real finale, like, they don't do the thing that almost every other MCU show has fallen victim to, which is the giant CGI battle thing.
Oh,
it's
God,
all man. Grounded. It's all very personal. Like, you have, we've talked a lot about morally complex characters, but these three very morally complex characters, like, having it out with, yeah, some powers, but with their words. And
yes.
I was so into it watching this. It was very much like watching Tony and Cap. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, watching them fight is great. Like, Tony, Cap, and the Winter Soldier. But it's like when they're talking to each other, when they're having that, like, really difficult heart-to-heart stuff, while also ready to, like, tear the other one's head off. Like, it's great. And what's even better is that Agatha, you lost your son. That's sad. By then, we kind of know that she didn't sacrifice him. Even though we're not 100% sure. But we do know that she killed other witches to take their power for her own. And then we have Billy, who just shouldn't exist. Like, he ultimately says it, you know, like when him and Wanda are talking, like, is he killing this other kid to save the life of his brother? Did he kill the real Billy to save himself?
Yeah, and which is
the only morally true character in all in this scene is death.
Mm-hmm.
Like, death is right. Like, this, neither one of you should be, but I have to take one of you.
Yep.
And, like, and Wanda sacrificing, Agatha sacrificing herself. But, like, she tries to make it seem like she's being morally altruistic, but also, mm-hmm. I mean, and she kind of is. She is trying to make up for, like, failing her own son, and she's got such an attachment to this kid now. But she's also, it's also still really self-involved. And, like, with the postscript, it does also feel like she's still trying to stick it to her ex-girlfriend. Like, she got me. I made what she said something like, just like it was an educated, what does Wolverine call it? Or Deadpool call it? An educated wish.
An educated wish. Yeah.
That she would come back as a ghost and still to stick it to her ex-girlfriend, like, save this other kid who also shouldn't exist. I don't know. It's fantastic television. It is cheesy. It is poppy. It is goofy. It's like I don't want to say Dawson's Creek, but like that level of like, yes, I see that this is all a little goofy, but I'm so involved in the theatrics and dramatics of it that I'm just caught up in it, man. Like, I want to see more, and I hope we get more.
Well, and that's like what I guess the episode 9 is kind of like about, is the whole thing of like, oh, I like the fact that we're getting one-off limited series for these characters within this section of the universe, right? So my thing is that, like, we don't need an Agatha's story is done. She's now.
We don't need an Agatha all along season 2.
What we need a Billy.
Is, yeah, Wiccan.
A Billy, a Wiccan, like, you know, whatever they want to call it, you know, Wiccan the TV series, and like in this, like the way that Vision, Sound and Vision is going to be a thing because they're making it, and we know that they're making it, but the witch area, the mysterious, like the mystical.
Here's what I think though.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this could possibly be Doctor Strange 3.
I was thinking a similar thing because,
I mean, as soon as this, like, the dude that killed their mom, man.
Exactly. And like that would totally be an awesome Doctor Strange 3. Do you know what I mean? Like setting up a table for this, like,
and it backseats Baron Mordo yet again.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. But I do think there's probably a little bit more compelling story here with this, these souls in other bodies, the mysticism. Agatha now is like this kind of guiding force of is she really helping him? Is she doing this to her own end? Like, knowing that you can inhabit someone else's body, like, is this her play? Like, there's a lot to explore there, and to bring Doctor Strange into that would be really interesting.
They did the same thing. They did, I mean, they, like,
they did that. That's what they did with WandaVision. Yeah.
WandaVision. They use that as a springboard to shorthand, like, you know, shorthand, like, the complexity of the villain in, like, in Multiverse of Madness. So I absolutely feel like this should be, this should set the table for whatever they do with Doctor Strange 3, because, like, that is definitely something, especially because of the way that Doctor Strange ends, you know, with the true death. And I mean, the whole thing is that, like, my favorite part about this is that, like, the through line through everything is that Wiccan thinks that Agatha killed his mother, and she keeps on telling him, I didn't kill your mother.
Yeah.
Like she wasn't dead. Like, when they think that she's dead, she wasn't dead. And that's the whole thing, like, where, like, that, like, it's not an inconsistency. It's just the story telling it properly the way that it should, withholding certain information and not in, because at this point, why would they have that information? Right.
No, like, none of them would know. Like, they know she's dead, but none of them would know what happened. So, I mean, maybe we get him finding his brother, and then we get involving Doctor Strange and all of it. Maybe that's the Young Avengers movie. Like, who knows? But
yeah,
like, I don't know. Just overall, they did such a good job of telling this story with these people, keeping it very personal and not like, much like Hawkeye, like, it's not saving the world. It's it's such a personal story, and, like, that's what made it really, really work. And that's where they need to be with these shows. Like, you know, that was the downfall of Moon Knight. Less that it's not the downfall of Loki, but, like, the fact that Loki is working outside of all of that is what makes that work. Like, I'm saving the world and fucking nobody knows it. Like, that's the crux of that show. You know, I can appreciate that about that show, but, like, you know, everything else, it's just like, no, it doesn't have to be about saving the world.
No, it doesn't. It just, like, well, I mean, and then, like, I think that that's, like, for me, that's the sweet spot, right? Like, make it extremely personal and make the collateral damage epic, but keep the stakes extremely, yeah. Extremely yeah. Personal. Like, it's the reason why I feel like, even though it's a very jaunty movie, they changed the script midway through, like before the pandemic, and then the pandemic, it's another casualty of the pandemic, but Multiverse of Madness kind of does that specific thing, which is telling a personal story that, because of the obsessions of that main character, the after effects of which are felt on an epic scale, but it's in a very extremely personal, like a personal story, because she's coming after she's doing something that she wants to do, and somebody is telling her, nah, bro, I don't think that you can do that, and I'm not going to let you, like, yeah. You know, doing something so altruistic of what she feels is altruistic, which is bringing back her children that were killed.
It also makes that whole movie feel like such a absolute heartbreak, because it's just like, Wanda, if you had just waited, like, 15 minutes, like, you may have found out that your kids are kind of sort of still alive. So.
No, absolutely. Like I love, that's my sweet spot. And I learned that, like, you know, I learned that by, like, wondering why the fuck did, like, certain things not work for me in MCU and DCEU. And that's the thing. That's the sweet spot for me, is, like, make this stuff extremely personal and, like, you know, at its core, right? Because I'm a kid of Die Hard. What's Die Hard about? A guy trying to save his marriage. It's not about Christmas. Yeah. It's not about
Earth Han. Movies get progressively worse because yeah. It becomes about him. Like, it makes the stakes bigger and bigger, and that actually makes it worse. So, I guess let's end with this. Like, I know time will tell, but, and we've talked about this offline, but I mean, is the MCU back, man? Like, back?
Like, we're definitely back. Like, I feel
fucking
like
Kevin made, cooking, man.
Yes, absolutely. Kevin made the adjustments. And like a true, true, true mensch, he did it in hiding. He just waited. He just kind of made the tweaks that he needed to make. He understood. He understood the assignment. Like, that's the thing I feel like that everybody is going to miss about this. Anybody who doesn't watch this show, you're missing out on prime Marvel. Like regardless of the structure, right? Like, I'm going to say, like, Marvel is back in a big way. And it has a lot to do with this kind of stuff. Small tweaks, making it sure that, ensuring that what really matters. I think that we got away from what really matters. We went from personal stories and making that the priority to spectacle, because the big payoff for Endgame,
because of Infinity War and Endgame,
and No Way Home. But those things were earned over years, Logan. I mean, we started off with an arms dealer and a piece of shit that decided to grow a heart and a conscience. And from that, we went to a point to where he sacrificed himself for Earth. Like, but it took us, what, 10 years, 15 years to get there?
Yeah.
Like, or 10 years, because, 11 years, 2008 to 2019. That's a long fucking road and a lot of fucking mistakes, but always keeping personal stakes at its core. And when we got to the whole, on your left, like, as soon as we got to that moment and that big fucking thing, that's all people thought about. And I think that Kevin and everybody else at Marvel thought the same thing. Oh, spectacle. With the exception of James Gunn, because James Gunn always kept it real, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the reason why he is where he is right now. Yeah. I think we're back. I think that Kevin understood, oh man, I fucked up. But you know what? At least he course corrected. Some guys, they will fucking drive that shit into the ground, even if they realize it, you know?
Well, we're about a month and change out from What If season 3, a couple of months out from Cap. I mean, we'll see if the ball keeps rolling. Cap will be the big first big test. Like, everybody will point to Deadpool and Wolverine, but again, I say, it would have been more amazing if that had failed. Now, the level it succeeded is astounding. But would have been, more of a surprise if that was an absolute bomb.
And so something we talked about offline, and I feel like is something that we need to talk about, because it's something that we haven't talked about, which is the implosion of Blade. And I feel like that's a big cinematic universe thing. But we've also talked about the fact that maybe Deadpool and Wolverine has ramifications in the universe or in that, and a soft reset is something like a legacy Blade film, or maybe giving Channing and the fucking wildness of Gambit an entry point and a starting point. And kind of like, my thing was, like, I started thinking about it because I was thinking about Iron Man, right? And
I think Agatha actually proves what you're saying.
Exactly, right? Like, you start with a nothing character, like, you give Channing...
That people fucking lost their minds about for 5 minutes. It's like, oh my god, that's incredible. Like, everybody, we get the Agatha All Along song, and, like, everybody's losing their mind. Like, oh my god, that's great. And then they're like, we're gonna do an Agatha show. But by the time we got to the Agatha show, everybody was like, why? And then we get into the Agatha show, and it's like, this is why, assholes. Like...
Why?
You know, getting like that Wesley Blade movie, or getting the Gambit movie with Channing Tatum, like, or a series or whatever. Like by the time we get it, we might be saying why, but if they do what they know how to do right, we'll find out why, you know? And yeah. So yeah, that if those are the ramifications, then okay.
Yeah. Okay. And I will say this. You have the ability now to do what you did with Iron Man, but with the X-Men, and start with Gambit. Because I know you're not the biggest fan of Gambit, but take this route with me.
2024 has done something that decades of comic reading and buying into,
yes,
like all of the adaptations, and 2024 has done something no other year has done. And at the very least, maybe not make me a fan, but at the very least, make me appreciate the character of Gambit.
And so let me throw something at you. Do you think that if you use him the same way you use Iron Man, and you create, you use that as the bubble effect, and you make, basically you make Gambit the criminal in the swamps, and you basically make a crime movie, a Cajun crime movie, but with mutants in it, and you start there, and you eventually trace Gambit's.
I'm down to watch. Going it. To like I don't. Yeah. Will it work ultimately as the starting point? I don't know, but I'm definitely down to watch it.
But then it gets rid of Wolverine as the center of the universe, and you do a soft reset. I mean, right? Like, does it become that, or does it make it so that maybe you have Logan as Professor X in this universe?
They're gonna do X-Men different. I think yes. We can kind of already like get a handle on that. Mostly because they have to, like,
yes,
doing what has been done before through the cartoons and the movies, and like it's not no. We say this a lot, but it is kind of the. Yeah, we really don't want to see Thomas and Martha Wayne shot in the fucking alley again, man. Like, we don't want to see Uncle Ben die again. So, yeah, do it differently. And, you know, yeah, yes, I think it could work. It's a time will tell thing if that's the route they go. But, yeah, do it differently. And if this is the different foot you want to start with, I think they can definitely make it work.
Yeah. I think like I'm getting a vision of an Xavier school without Xavier, and Logan being the old man Logan of it all, so that you can get Hugh Jackman, and Hugh Jackman can be in that role, and a whole thing of like not even just about a school for children, but a second chance, right? Yeah. Like, cause that's like, that's what would Gambit would be like. You end the Gambit show at the heels of the, like at the end, like, you know, literally falling to his knees at the gates of fucking the Xavier School for Gifted Children, and fucking Logan walking up and going, "What do you need, bub?" And it being the entry point to where you introduce this school that is more than just children, right? It's a shelter from the storm, and then that becomes the entry point, because you can't just do it all about kids. It's kind of gross now when you think about fucking that piece of shit Bryan Singer and all the like the little kid of it all, and fucking that's just fucking weird. And we don't need a world with Xavier, right? Like, because that sets it with the whole, oh well, then there's a Magneto. Well, even if there isn't, like, we could still have a Magneto, but it'd be different because Charles is gone, and they've already tested the waters with Charles being gone. Why? Yeah. Because we saw it on X-Men 97.
Yeah.
We can see the path. It's almost like it's a test, right? Like X-Men 97 is the test for, because I mean, everybody in X-Men 97, except for fucking Jubilee, is literally a 35-year-old person that has nothing but drama in their life.
Yeah.
I mean, that's literally what it is, right? But it also allows you to recast and recontextualize. And guess what? You got a second major star. I mean, like, people can say what they want, but Charming Potato, he's a star. He just hasn't found the vehicle like Robert Downey Jr. and like Chris Evans, like most of the MCU stars, right? And he's been wanting this so fucking bad. You could get him to do it for a bag of Doritos, Cool Ranch Extreme. Like, literally, that's what you could probably do. But it's all to say, like, I'm very excited. Like, I like the fact that they let Deadpool and Wolverine be what it was, but then we got this wonderful thing out of it, which is...
My favorite meme online right now is the two guys. I mean, they used it for a lot, but it's they're, like, on a bus, and, like, one side of the bus is, like, all dark and stormy, and the other side is all light and sunny. And it's just two guys being like, it's nothing but violence and cameos. One is sad about it, one is happy about it. Like, Deadpool Wolverine. I get the people who are like, there's nothing there. And I'm like, there was never anything there. What are you talking about? I don't know why you wanted this movie to be anything other than this. Deadpool. Like, what do you want?
That's my thing, right? It's like, it's Deadpool. It has, it's stupid jokes, extreme violence, and...
Yeah, crass humor, and then, that little touch of heart, you know? Exactly. Like, that's what that needs to be. So, all that to say, what... They're gonna do the X-Men different. It's... They wanted to do the Fantastic Four first, wholly, and I'm glad we're getting that, and then we'll move towards the X-Men, probably post Secret Wars. So, I'm sure we'll get bits and pieces here and there, but, that'll be the big thing after Secret Wars is the X franchise. Absolutely. So, and I also love, and I know we've gone long, we need to wrap up, but I love that Feige and his answer to all of this, because I'm sure James Gunn. James Gunn's answer to all of this, because I'm sure Gunn was in the Marvel camp as these things were being developed, so he knew the stuff that they had in the chamber. And his answer to this, while we are getting we're getting Creature Commandos the end of this year, or the first of next year, and we may or may not get season. We'll get season two of Peacemaker next year, but that's it. Seemingly, possibly on the TV front, unless we get Lanterns by the end of next year. But his big answer to all of this is just that, we have Superman movie coming out next year. Rightfully so. That's where DC fell apart, is trying to play the Marvel game. We got this and this and this and this and this, and that didn't fucking work, man. You're playing a game you don't know how to play. You don't know the rules. You don't understand the game. Sometimes Marvel doesn't understand the game, but they invented it. So you're not going to be able to catch up to them. You're not going to be able to play that game. You need to make your own game and play that game. And that's what James Gunn is doing. So next year is going to be fucking wild, man. Yes. If you had told 13-year-old me, that we'd get any of this, but I don't think we've had a year like we're getting next year.
No. I mean, shit. Okay. Telling either one of us 13-year-olds that you're going to get, this is the shit. Okay, so Deadpool and Wolverine is the shit we used to talk about that we knew that would never happen. Oh, you know, I want a fucking hard R-rated, Deadpool movie. Or I want a hard R-rated, Wolverine movie where they slices and dices and fucks shit up. To pop songs, because we're fucking kids, it's all about pop songs, right? I wouldn't have believed you. I know 13-year-old me. I know 18-year-old me would have fucking just
yeah. You're fucking all right, yeah, that'll never happen. So, yeah, sure. But here we are, 3 MCU movies next year. almost what a half dozen fucking TV shows over the course of the next year. It's crazy, and I'm so excited for 2025. And will something be disappointing? Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure that something is going to be disappointing. But you know, I am legitimately excited about all of this stuff for the first time in a while. All right, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com. But more importantly, you can go read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieowl.com. We are going to be starting Logan's column up again in December. I haven't told him, but we've got three, which will bring us into 2025, and then he'll have his final whenever he has his final.
Hopefully that will be done in time for the new year. So
yes. What's going on right now. There's a lot of new reviews on the site. Go check it out. Go check out some of the stuff that we did for Halloween. We got some scary stuff there. I mean, even though Halloween is over with, but we've got some really great stuff coming up on themovieowl.com. So go check it out.
And we'll be back next week talking about who knows what, because I don't think there's anything coming out that I want to see. So
I think we're going to wrap up Only Murderers because the finale just happened and I did not. I didn't watch it yet. I haven't watched it yet. So I feel like the season of finales for Only Murderers are always a great thing to have a chat about, especially considering the fact that last year was kind of like a great entryway into the next season. And so like, because we know we're getting two seasons left, yeah. We definitely probably already set up the next one. I don't know, but we'll talk about that probably. I mean, at least I think like that seems like a good show to talk about.
I'll definitely have watched more TV by then. So, all right. Yeah, we will see you guys next week. Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Cal-El. Number 8, Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but they're really all sold out. See it all together. You with me now. Nerds.